welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on identity theft when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax law was passed or launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only upon the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of our population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Today, of course, the fears of the early opponents of this tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top rate had jumped to 60%, and by the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, the top rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th before earning enough to satisfy the tax man at every level. This year, the average American family is going to work until May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to work to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. Now, what does that make us? This income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. The income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities, and the income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. Social Security is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. That's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? If you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school and ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our tax and status school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of identity theft. The identity theft is identified, first of all, in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, where it tells us plainly that there's somebody out there claiming to be Jews who are, in fact, not Jews. They are liars. So let me start by reading those two scriptures to you again. That's the subject matter of this week's program. He says now in verse 9, this is chapter 2, verse 9 of Revelation, I know your works, and I know your tribulation and poverty, but you are rich, and I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. And in verse 9 of chapter 3, behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I'll make them to come and worship before your feet and to know that I've loved you. Twice. In two chapters now, he tells us that there's somebody stealing the identity of the Jews. That's why I mentioned to you, I said, I think every Jew in the world should be very concerned about this identity theft. Now, Judah, the father of all of the Jews, had five sons. Er and Onan both died childless, which left Shelah, a third son from his first wife, and the two boys, Phares and Zerah, twins, which were born of his illicit relationship with his daughter-in-law, Tamar. These three lines are described in the book of Numbers, for instance, I think it's about Numbers chapter 26, which is a parallel chapter to Numbers chapter 1, which tells us what the populations of the 10 tribes of Israel were, and it gives the genealogy of these various people. And it shows that there are three distinct lines who are descended from Judah, but we discovered historically that in 164 BC, the Jews, those three lines, conquered another group of people. They're called the Edomites. Those Edomites, once taken into captivity, were assimilated into the Jewish population. And by the time that Jesus was born, this assimilated population, these conquered people, had taken political control of the nation. And King Herod was one of these Edomite descendants of Esau. Now let's take a look at this guy Esau and his birth and the script from the Bible. And we'll talk about world conflict and adversity. And if you are watching your evening news or you're reading the USA Today or Time Magazine or any of the news magazines, you'll see that there's no shortage of conflict in Afghanistan and Iraq primarily today. But there's conflict constantly in Israel with the Palestinians and the Jews. There's conflict in France between the Muslims and the French. There's conflict in Africa, where people have been killing each other now for the last 100 years by the tens of millions. The world is not short of any conflicts. Now, a common theme found in most plays, novels, stories, and movies is that of a conflict. Usually, this conflict exists between two of the main characters in the script. In the play Julius Caesar, there was a conflict between Caesar and his conspirators, Brutus and Cassius. In the story of Cinderella, we find a conflict between the title character, Cinderella, and her wicked stepmother. Without this conflict, without this opposition, the entire plot becomes pointless, as it gives life and meaning to the events and actions of the characters in the play. Some manner of conflict or struggle is actually expected, just as they exist in nature. They exist in our lives. They exist in history and in stories, usually in the form of the age-old conflict between good and evil. Today, even the casual observer in the events that are transpiring in the world can perceive the existence of a conflict or a struggle between ideologies, philosophies, laws, religion, governments, which produce the trouble, the misfortunes, and the adversity in the world today. However, it's not apparent to most who the actors or individuals are at the forefront of this conflict in the world, or why these conflicts and why all of this adversity exists in the first place. Well, God Almighty, the God of Abraham, has written a script for the world which identifies the two main characters who would be involved in an age-long struggle or conflict. The two actors are Esau and Jacob. This is a constant theme throughout the scripture. So let's look at the script and let's see what it was or what it has to say about these two main characters. Toward the beginning of God's script, remember the script now is the Bible, we read of the character Esau making his first appearance on the world stage, as he is being born to Rebekah and Isaac along with his twin brother Jacob. The scene opens with Isaac's request to God on behalf of his wife. In verse 21, this is Genesis chapter 25, verses 21 through 23, if you're keeping track. And Isaac prayed to the Eternal for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord answered him, and Rebekah was his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her. And she said, "If it be so, why am I thus?" And she went to inquire of the Eternal. And the Eternal said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from your bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." Do you get that? The elder shall serve the younger. Here we find that this conflicting and antagonistic relationship between these two characters, Jacob and Esau, was ordained by God even before their birth. Rebekah was barren, and it was God who had allowed her to conceive, forming Esau and Jacob in the womb along with their unique and differing characteristics. God purposely made these two characters different, and he made them contrary to one another. The contrasting differences between Esau and Jacob were represented by their struggle or their conflict in their mother's womb. This was to set the stage for generations of conflict and antagonism between Esau and Jacob, who were regarded by God as two different nations or two different racial groups. And in some translations, it says two rival races. They thus were to be separate nations and separate peoples, each with their own separate character roles and possessing contrasting characteristics. Two manner of people shall be separated from your bowels, God told Rebekah. Here then we find the primary origin and source of world conflict, international strife and conspiracies, revolutions and political upheavals. This conflict and struggle was a characteristic that was to exist between these descendants of Esau and Jacob, that is to say, a permanent and a continuing conflict between two nations, two races of people. This then brings the matter within the scope of international law, and our conflicts today lie within the international sphere. So strong is this theme that it becomes a principle of and by itself. Throughout the Bible, the nations of Edom and Israel were in conflict with one another, and the struggle between Esau and Jacob in the womb was thus a sign of what was to come in the world on the international level. It was to set the stage for a continued conflict between these two conflicting and competing ideologies, their laws, philosophies, governments, religion, and status of the descendants of these two characters. The evidence of the God-ordained conflict and struggle between Esau and Jacob can be followed down through history to present time. World conflicts, wars, persecutions, and social struggles are a result of two different systems generated by the two different people, two different nations descended from Esau and Jacob. While there are differences among any two races or nations, among no other two races has such an antagonistic and conflicting relationship existed as between the Jews and the white Christian people of the world. Throughout history, these two people have been at odds with one another. Their manner of law, government, religion, and ideologies are diametrically opposite to one another. It is an ancient conflict between the ancient adversaries of Esau, the Jews, and Jacob, the white Christians. The connection between the white race and Christianity and the Jews with Judaism is universally recognized. Judaism, or the religion of the Jews as expressed in their Talmud, is contrary to the precepts of the Christian Bible. And what the Bible approves of, the Talmud disapproves of, and what the Bible prohibits, the Talmud allows in some form. The table on the following page bears witness to this. Hundreds of such contrasting illustrations could easily be presented to further prove that Judaism and the Jewish Talmud are the exact opposite and they are antagonistic to the Bible and Christianity, just as Esau and Jacob were. This exposes the false notion that Christianity was derived from Judaism, and it nullifies the term Judeo-Christian. The Talmud teaches the opposite laws and principles from that of the Bible, even where a sound and well-recognized moral law of God is concerned. The Talmud, in every instance, tries to find some exception to it. The exception, the deviation, or the modification is then justified by the words and teachings of some ancient rabbi, or the sages, as they are called in the Talmud. The Talmud is not a book of godly morals or virtuous ethics, but is replete with perversion and teachings of sexual debauchery. Contrary to popular belief, the Jews are not followers of the Old Testament law, since they are not the people of the Old Testament, the Israelites. In fact, in the book Sanhedrin, section 88b, the Talmud teaches that its precepts and laws are of a greater stringency than in respect to those of the Bible. And it also says that when a Jew claims that there is no breach of Talmudic law, he may act even though a biblical law may be transgressed. It is the Talmud that guides the life and the spirit of the Jew. The Talmud is to this day the circulating heart's blood of the Jewish religion, and whatever laws, customs, or ceremonies that we Jews observe, whether we are Orthodox, conservative, reform, or merely spasmodic sentimentalists, we follow the Talmud. It is our common law. Now, the two most contrasting factors of these two religions, I'll give you nine of them here. I gave them to you a little earlier, but I'm going to repeat them. They're that important. There's a night and day. There's a 180-degree distinction between the Babylonian Talmud, the life's circulating heart blood of Jewish religion, and the Bible, that is, the scriptures given to us by Moses. Judaism from the Talmud approves of sodomy. If one committed sodomy with a child of less than 9 years, no guilt is incurred. Sanhedrin 54b. Now from the Bible we read, "You shall not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination." So says Leviticus 18, verse 22. Judaism from the Talmud teaches that it approves of child sacrifice to idols. It says, "He who gives of his seed to Molech incurs no punishment." Sanhedrin 64a. Well, in the Bible teaches that whosoever gives any of his seed to Molech, he shall surely be put to death. In Leviticus 20, verse 2. The cursing of parents is allowed in the Talmud. It says one who curses his parents isn't punished unless he curses them by divine name in Sanhedrin 66a. Cursing of parents is prohibited in the Bible by the fifth commandment. He that curses his father or mother shall be put to death. Exodus 21 verse 17. The Talmud allows enchanting. It says that it is permitted to consult by charm the spirits of oil and eggs and make incantations in Sanhedrin 101a. The practice of enchantment in the Bible is prohibited with the words that say, "None of you shall be an enchanter or a charmer or a consulter with familiar spirits," in Deuteronomy 18, verses 10 and 11. Bestiality is allowed and condoned in the Talmud. Women having intercourse with a beast can marry a priest, and the act is but a mere wound. Yabamouth 59b. In the Bible, Moses instructed us, "You shall not lie with any beast, nor shall any woman stand before a beast to lie with it." That's Leviticus 18, verse 23. Harlotry in the Talmud is a virtue. A harlot's hire is permitted, for what the woman has received is legally a gift. From Avodah Zarah 62b and 63a. In the Bible, we are instructed by our God, "She that plays the whore in her father's house shall surely be put to death." Deuteronomy 22, verse 21. Blasphemy is allowed in the Talmud. It says one can rebuke or revile the divine name if mentally applying it to some other object. Sanhedrin 65a and b. Blasphemy is punishable by our God. "He that blasphemes the name of the Eternal shall surely be put to death." Leviticus 24, verse 16. In the Talmud, we're not required to keep vows. One may declare, "Every vow which I may make in the future shall be null." Nidorin 23a and 23b. In Numbers 30, verse 2, God instructs us that if a man vows, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that he spoke. That's where we get our term. It says a man's word is his bond. Numbers 30, verse 2. Murder is even condoned in the Talmud. If 10 men smote a man with 10 staves and he died, they're exempt from punishment. Sanhedrin 78a. Murder is strictly prohibited. It's a violation of the Ten Commandments in the Bible. He that smites a man with a stave, so he dies, he is a murderer, and shall be put to death, as we see in Numbers 35, verse 18. Now, the nature of the Jew is inclined not towards biblical precepts, but towards Jewish lore and tradition within the Talmud, which is the mainstay of Jewish existence. The Bible, then, is used merely for show, so as to give the Jews the appearance of being truly godly and God's people. While their true law and religion is derived from the teachings and traditions of the Talmud. The Talmud is the work of numerous Jewish scholars over a period of some 700 years, roughly speaking, between 200 BC and about 500 AD. The Jewish religion as it is today traces its descent without a break through all of the centuries from the Pharisees. Their leading ideas and methods found expression in a literature of enormous extent, of which a very great deal is still in existence. The Talmud is the largest and most important single member of that literature. The Talmud is actually the product of the Palestinian and Babylonian schools, and it is generally called the Babylonian Talmud. The Pharisees were adherents of the Babylonian thought, and it was this thought and this religion which Christ was always at war against. Christ rebuked them because they rejected the commandments of God, so that you may keep your own Babylonian traditions, he said in Mark 7, verse 9. Judaism and Christianity are poles apart. The opposition between these two systems is as radical today as it was in the days of Christ. But Judaism is not only derived from Babylonian thought, but also from Canaanite religious practices. Esau had married women of the Canaanite race whose religious practices were abhorred by God, as we see in Leviticus 20, verse 23. Jacob, however, learned the ways of the Eternal and learned his commandments. But Edom rejected God's ways and worshipped other gods, as we see in 2 Chronicles 25, verse 14. And the Jews, like their Edomite, Canaanite, Pharisaical, and Babylonian ancestors, also reject the commandments of God to this day. And this rejection and this defiance of God is what Judaism is based upon. As the Jew Bernard Lazare revealed, he said, quote, "It is the Jews who originated biblical exegesis, that is, a critical analysis of the Bible, just as they were the first to criticize the forms and doctrines of Christianity." Truly, has Darmstadter written, "The Jew was the apostle of unbelief, and every revolt of mine originated with him," unquote. That's cited from Bernard Lazare, Anti-Semitism, Its History and Causes, published in London, Britain's Publishing House, 1967, page 149. Since Jews have an inclination towards this Talmudic religion which defies God, an obvious conflict will always exist between them and anyone who adheres to the laws or ways of God. So repugnant was the Talmud to the white Christian people of Europe that on numerous occasions kings and popes issued edicts to have the Talmud burned. Like Esau and Jacob, the Jews and white Christian people have been struggling and in conflict with each other from their first encounter with one another. A look through history reveals the continual disputes, the arguments and disagreements between Jews and Christians. And one of the earliest instances is the dialogue of Justin Martyr with Tryphon the Jew, which is cited in the New Standard Jewish Encyclopedia of 1977, 5th edition, page 562. Such dialogues and disputations between Jews and Christians have generally centered around the same subjects, such as the virgin birth or the nature of the messianic prophecies and their fulfillment, the divinity of Jesus, and various aspects of the law. Contrasting opinions on such topics have been permanent traits of these two people. Now, this contrasting and conflicting ways of thinking between Jews and white Europeans is not artificial, nor is it a result of their environment, but it's based upon the nature, the physical constitutions of these two separate and distinct people. Thus, the conflict between them is not reconcilable any more than it was between Esau and Jacob. The Jew, Maurice Samuel, in speaking to those of the white race, explained it very well when he said, "There are two life forces in the world that I know, Jewish and Gentile, ours and yours. I do not believe that this primal difference between Gentile and Jew is reconcilable. You and we may come to an understanding, but never to a reconciliation. There will be irritation between us as long as we are in intimate contact. For nature and constitution and vision divide us from all of you forever." Cited by Maurice Samuel, "You Gentiles, Harcourt, Brace & Company, New York, 1924, page 19. The conflicting differences that exist between Jews and those of the white race are primarily a result of their genetic differences or their nature and constitution. Jews act and think differently from white Christian peoples because there's a difference in their brains. According to Dr. Richard Goodman, in a study that he made for Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, there are 112 hereditary diseases within the Jewish race which originate from causes found within the Jewish brain and central nervous system, as documented in genetic disorders among the Jewish people by Dr. Richard Goodman of Johns Hopkins University Press. Some of these diseases include Bloom syndrome, familial dysautonomia, I guess that's D-Y-S-A-U-T-O-N-O-M-I-A, Gaucher's disease, and Tay-Sachs disease. These mental and neurological abnormalities have a direct relation on Jewish behavioral patterns, which other peoples would find to be obnoxious and alien. These mental diseases no doubt account for some of the common Jewish traits, such as being abrasive, rude, stingy, sexually perverted, aggressive, schizophrenic, and hostile. Such mental and neurological disorders among Jews has long been known to the science world. Dr. Joseph A. Jacobs, who is in fact a Jew, in the Journal of the Anthropological Institute of Great Britain, published in 1886, volume 15, page 360, has lists comparing high percentage of Jews having mental diseases. In the Jewish Encyclopedia, we learn some more. The Jews are more subject to diseases of the nervous system than the other races and peoples among which they dwell. Hysteria, neurasthenia appear to be most frequent, and some physicians of large experience among the Jews have even gone so far as to state that most of them are neurasthenic and hysterical. The Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 9, published in 1905, page 225. Now, Esau had a very discernible hatred of Jacob, and the conflicting and antagonistic relationship between Esau and Jacob was magnified and intensified when Esau sold his birthright to Jacob. He sold it for a mere bowl of pottage, as we see in Genesis 25, verse 33. Jacob then had the legal right to receive the blessings of the inheritance which he received from Isaac by pretending that he was Esau. When Esau realized what had happened and that Jacob now possessed the blessings that could have been his, Esau hated Jacob because of the blessings. We see that in Genesis 27, verse 41. This hatred was now to be an attribute and an earmark of the character of Esau Edom. Throughout the rest of the script, throughout the rest of the Bible, this attribute does not change, nor does it subside. It is clearly revealed by Scripture that Esau Edom would be a perpetual adversary of Jacob Israel, as it is written, the children of Esau hated the sons of Jacob, and the hatred and the enmity were very strong between them all the days unto this day. So says Jasher 58, verse 28. And thus the descendants of Esau would hate and despise the entire race descended from Jacob, and Esau's hatred of Jacob was exhibited when Edom refused to give Israel passage through its borders, in Numbers 20, verse 21. During the 8th century B.C., the prophet Amos distinctly rebukes Edom for her cruelty and anger towards Israel. Thus says the Eternal, for three transgressions of Edom, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he did pursue his brother with the sword, and did cast off all pity, and his anger did tear perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever. Genesis 27:41. Some 200 years later, the prophet Ezekiel also offers condemnation against Edom or Mount Seir, the Edomites, because of their perpetual hatred for the children of Israel. Because you, Mount Seir, has had a perpetual hatred and has shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword in the time of their calamity, in the time that their iniquity had an end. Ezekiel 35, verse 5. Mount Seir, representing the nation or race of Esau Edom or the Edomites, has had a perpetual hatred for the children of Israel down through history. And all throughout the Bible, the Edomites had shown their hatred and opposition of God's chosen people, Israel. This was a characteristic of these people which they will not or would not lose. Hang on a minute. I've got to give you a reminder here at the midway portion of the program. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program and often endorses and recommends books, periodicals, papers, newsletters, and so forth to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that these authors or publications that we endorse or that we recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Now, most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, they're economic, they're sectarian, they're racial or ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our webpage, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a book called Esau Edom. Who is Esau Edom? Some of the most prominent people in history have been Jews. Jews are not dummies. We're not running Jews down. These people are very talented people. In fact, I saw a paper not too long ago, and I think I reported it to you, that of all of the Nobel Prize winners, now this Nobel Prize I think goes back to about 1840 or thereabouts, it's back in the early 1800s, and Jews have won, I think it was 105 or 10 of the prizes, and Muslims, that is, people of the Muslim religion, not necessarily just Arabs, had won, I think it was 2 or 3. They were contrasting, you know, the differences in these two groups of people, or two races of people. And I thought that was pretty phenomenal. I don't know how many Frenchmen have won Nobel Prizes, or how many Americans, or how many. But see, here in America, if a Jew wins the Nobel Prize, he isn't distinguished per se as being, you know, French or German or something else. He'd just be called an American. And the fact that he's a Jew, he'd be called a Jew. And so Jews, whether they're in France or Germany or in America or wherever, would get the credit for it. But I think there's a race of people. You have to, you know, take your head off and give them credit where credit is due. They're a very intelligent and a very alert race. But notice here in the script that God himself now has created this good and evil. Good and evil. This Talmud that they have adopted, their moral outlook on life, is diametrically the opposite of the Bible. And we Americans, I guess I can speak for you Canadians and Australians also, you take a look at the moral standards that we Anglo-Saxons, we Christians out here in the Christian world of practice today, are influenced by the seminaries and the preachers, the movies, the television shows, and etc. And what we see is a steady deterioration of the morals in America. And I would suspect that in the Anglo-Saxon countries around the world. And this steady moral decline is condemned in the scripture constantly and over and over and over again. We have decided that we would rather practice nudity, sexual perversion, bestiality, sodomy, and all of these filthy, perverted, vile behavioral patterns that we learn from the Talmud, that we learn from our adversaries, rather than to follow our God and to practice righteousness, which is condemned, by the way, in two key chapters, Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26. And our God is going to use these people, the Jews, to destroy us. So tuck it away in your heart. When God told you, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, and condemned the practices of the Jewish people back in the time of Christ, constantly he upbraided them for their perverted practices. Throughout the Gospels, you'll see Jesus constantly rebuking the Pharisees who practiced the Babylonian Talmud. Well, we now have adopted the Talmud. You can see it on the Tonight Show. You can listen to it in the jokes and in the humor that we are all now enmeshed in. So instead of obeying God and keeping his commandments, we now obey the Talmud and practice Talmudic law. How do you like it? Well, there is an end result that comes from that. As the twig is bent, the tree will grow. And there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And every one of these crimes is going to have a penalty. And the Great Tribulation is that penalty. So get ready, boys and girls, because when it happens to us, when our economy collapses and we go into national captivity, don't blame it on the Jews. You blame it on yourself. You had a choice. You could follow righteousness or you could follow wickedness and evil. And we Americans have immersed ourselves in every evil, every wickedness that we could imagine. And those that we couldn't imagine, we borrowed from the Talmud. If we could do it, we want to wallow in it. So that's not the fault of the Jew. That's the fault of you and me, because we would not say no. You know, they got this ad that goes out and says, just say no to drugs. Just say no. You know, you could just say no to usury. You could say, just say no to bestiality. Just say no to perversion and television. Just say no. But we don't. The other day I saw piece on the news up in Pennsylvania. They had a whole school board up there. The people of this county voted them out, or out of the school district, voted them out of office. They had introduced a new concept into the schools. It was called intelligent design. And later on, after the people voted these seven or eight school board members out, the judge in the case, a federal judge, ruled that it was a violation of the separation of church and state. Now, you want to remember that America was created in 1890. That same Supreme Court said that America was a Christian nation. America has been transformed. America is no longer a Christian nation. I mean, let's wake up and get real. And so even the electorate in the country is so incensed against God and the first chapter of Genesis, that we would rather wallow in the fairy tale of evolution than we would in the science of Genesis 1. I mean, that's just the way we are. Now, there's an ultimate end to that. And what's going on here is that we have been influenced by a group of people here who are identity thieves. We actually believe that these people, the Edomites over here, are the Jews. Now, there are some real Jews out there, but most of them are Christians. The descendants of the Jew, Judah, have turned to Christianity and given up the Sabbath and lost their identifying sign. Now, the imposters who come along and claim to be Jews have been accepted as the Jews, and their Babylonian Talmud and their religious ideology has now been accepted into the Western Christian world. That's why Christianity has become so perverted, so wicked, so evil, so rotten. Now, nowhere in the Scripture is such hatred and animosity to be found as that which Esau Edom had for Jacob Israel. The question is, where in history can we find the manner of hatred of one group of people by another? The parallel is clearly revealed in the hatred which the Jews have for the white Christian people. The most obvious evidence for the perpetual hatred that Jews have towards the white Christian people is found in their own Talmud. In the Talmud, in this work of hatred and perversion, the Jewish rabbis and sages throughout the centuries have expressed the Jewish attitude of hate towards white Christians. The following are some excerpts from the Talmud which demonstrate Jewish hatred of Christians. Here's a list. Listen to this. This comes right from the Talmud. Now, it is allowed to cheat a Gentile and take usury of him. Baba. It's A-B-H-O-D-A-H, I guess that's Abba da Zera 54a. The Goyim, Christians, are regarded as unclean, Shabbath 145b. It is not allowed to rob a brother Jew, but to rob a Gentile is allowed, Sanhedrin 57a. You know, I'm going to pause right there. You know, in the Bible it tells you not to oppress a stranger within your gates. It's against the law for us, under the law of God, to oppress a Chinese or a Vietnamese, or for that matter, to oppress a Jew within our gates. We're prohibited from doing that. But they openly teach their people that it's all right if they do it to us. Now, that's a very marked contrast in philosophies, wouldn't you say? Now, the Goyim are not like men, but are as animals. And so says Kurathua 6b, the seed of a goy is worth the same as that of a beast. Kethabah 3b. A Jew must not enter the home of a Christian, Gittin 62a. The goyim are not to be cured or helped when sick, even for money, Abadah Zera 27b. And guess who most of the doctors are in America? Well, I shouldn't say the most. I don't know what the absolute numbers are, but there are more Jewish doctors per capita than there are of any other race or group of people. In fact, 70%, now get this, 70% of all Jews are professionals. Only 30% of Jews don't go to college or are not professional. That's why they dominate banking and the movies and business and industry. They're the captains of our society. And when Ben Franklin said in 200 years, they'll take over the country, they'll infiltrate it and they'll take it over, he wasn't whistling Dixie. He'd already lived to see that happen in Spain and Portugal, and he said so. So, it isn't something new. It's not a phenomenon. It was written into the script. And we have a choice. There's good and there's evil. And you and I have a choice. And we can choose evil or we can choose good, one or the other. It just happens that Americans have chosen the wickedness and the evil. For instance, let's take a look at the Federal Reserve. Did you know that God told us not to have an unjust weight or balance in our bag? That's in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. And he repeated that in Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16. He says, don't have unjust weights and balances in your bag. Back in 1836, President Andrew Jackson vetoed the U.S. National Bank Bill. And he said, I'm going to rout you bankers out. These bankers were Jews. Jews have always dominated banking. And the Jews put banking, and they put the U.S. National Bank in 1794 and operated until 1836. I guess it was 1796 to 1836, and there for 40 years, two 20-year terms. So Jackson threw them out. Now, Abraham Lincoln put them back in. Abraham Lincoln put them back in. And in 1913, Woodrow Wilson gave them their charter. And we, the gullible goys, have used their paper money from 1862 or 3 until today in opposition to our God that told us not to do that. Now, that's a choice, boys and girls, and we made that choice. And I'll tell you something else. We Americans have gold and silver coin right now minted every day by our mint. And we Americans still prefer paper money over gold and silver. If we have to choose between the laws of our God and the laws of these godless atheists, we will choose the godless atheists every single time, and if necessary, we'll vote the bastards out of office and we'll replace them so that we can make sure that we have evolution and every form of filth and evil like sex education and public schools, which in 1960, I'll show you how successful government is and how successful perversion has been in America. For you listeners around the world, listen to this. In 1960, 5% of teenage girls, 5% turned up pregnant outside of marriage. We had an illegitimacy rate of 5%. Well, today, it's 30%. 30%. We introduced sex education in public school, which opened the door for competing ideologies in sex education, such as the North American Gay Man Association, something on that order, and alternative lifestyles. We didn't get that from the Bible, boys and girls. We got that from the Babylonian Talmud. And we have adopted it, we love it, and we wallow in it. And my point is that there's a choice to be made here. There's good and there's evil. And it was designed by our God clear back with Rebekah, with Esau and Jacob. And that's what you're seeing here in this story. And by the way, let me give you the name and address of the guy that wrote the book. His name is Charles A. Wiseman. Wrote a book here called Who is Esau Edom? I don't know if you can get this from this address. I don't know if the address is good. I'll just give it to you anyway. If you're looking for a book, you might want to go to your used bookstore. Used bookstore. You might find this in a Christian bookstore, too. I don't know. They might have it. They might handle it. 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D in Burnsville, Minnesota. The zip code there is 55337. This is published by Wiseman Publications, 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D, Burnsville, Minnesota, 55337. Again, very well documented book. And I mentioned this a time or two. Oftentimes somebody will write me a letter and say, you know, Gordon, you're in those damn anti-Semites and you're a racist and so on. Before you write me the letter, would you do me this service, do me this courtesy? When you write the letter and you want to take exception with something that I've reported here, would you please cite the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence of the error that I've made? Oftentimes I'll get reports here, I'll get an email, and somebody will take exception to something that I've said or reported on. And they call me names. But we don't have any names or dates. We don't have times and places. We don't have facts. We don't have witnesses. We don't have evidence. And one of the things that we do here is very carefully research out. Well, we try to very carefully research out. I mentioned this the other day. Once in a while we screw up. You know, when I read a book or when I recite a statistic, when I'm giving you these facts here, I'm on page 60 of the book, and I'm looking at a list here. And I have cited to you, for instance, it is permitted to deceive a goy. It is permitted to deceive a goy. That's cited in Baha Karma 113b. And Jews must try to deceive Christians. Zohar 1:160a. That's cited in the Talmud. Now you can go to your local, library, and ask for a copy of the Talmud, and many libraries have them. And you can go look this up for yourself. Nobody ever does, but you can go look these up for yourself, and then come back and report to me that we have made an error. But give me the time and the date and the facts, would you? I had a student the other day called me up, and he cited a mistake. He sent us an email and he said, "Now in your paperwork, you have cited a case. I forgot what the name of the case was now. But in Chapter 5 of Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, there's a section called Legal Quotations. It's a section of probably 300 or 400 legal citations from the Supreme Courts and various other courts around the country. And he said, one of those is an error." Well, now, that could well be, you know, things like that happen. There are typographical errors. We cite a case and then we give you the wrong citation. I mean, that can happen. I haven't researched it out or looked it up yet. The boy gave me that report the other day. He said, "You got a mistake there. We're going to have to fix that at some point in time." But at least this guy cited the exact case. He said, "It's on page so-and-so, and it's this number, and this is the citation, and here's the name of the case, and it's in error. Why don't you fix that?" And that's what I'm pointing out to you. Oftentimes, I just get letters that come in here just calling me names. And of what value is that? If I have reported something that's incorrect, you should correct it. You should have the evidence. You should have the documentation. If there's something here in this book that's not true, then you should come back with, well, here's what the truth is. Here's what the position really is. And then let's make that correction. Now, Edom also had a hatred for Jesus Christ. The prophecies of Christ's birth were well known to the people at that time. And he was to be the king over the earth in Zechariah 14, verse 9, Daniel 7, verse 13. He's called the Messiah in Daniel 9, verse 25, the Redeemer of Israel in Isaiah 59:20, and would be of the house of David, as reported by Jeremiah in Jeremiah 23, verse 5. The script also reveals that Christ had enemies from the moment of his birth. Jesus Christ, the Redeemer, the Messiah, had enemies. Now, who would be the enemy of an innocent little baby? Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews, or the king of the Judeans? For we have seen a star in the east, and we're come to worship him." Well, when Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him, as reported in Matthew 2, verses 1 through 3. Now, why was this Herod troubled about the birth and arrival of the Messiah, Jesus Christ? Well, first we find that Herod was not of the same racial lineage as Christ. We reported this a little earlier in this book, Antipater. The name Antipater, an Edomian by birth, was made by Caesar, procurator of all of Judea, and his son, commonly called Herod the Great, was at the time of Christ's birth the king of Judea, including Edomia. Remember, Edomia now is synonymous with these Edomites. Herod, like his father Antipater, was an Edomian or an Edomite by birth, and Josephus in his Antiquities of the Jews also esteems Herod as an Edomian in Book 14, Chapter 15, Section 2, page 438. And Herod had talked in secret to the wise men, telling them to diligently search for the young child, and when they found him, to come back and tell him, so that he may come and worship him also. Notice the subtlety and the deception. That's reported in Matthew 2, verses 7 and 8. This was actually a ruse so that Herod could kill Christ. When the wise men found Christ, they were warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod in Matthew 2, verse 12. Thus they did not return to Herod with the information of Christ's location, which made Herod the Edomite furious. And then, when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged, and he sent and he slew all the male children that were in Bethlehem, and in all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time, which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. So this Herod, the Edomite, had such a hatred for Christ and what he represented, that he had ordered a mass execution to make sure that Jesus would be killed. Had not the angel of the Eternal, the angel of God, instructed Joseph to flee to Egypt with Jesus, Herod would have surely succeeded in killing him. That doesn't sound like love and compassion to me. You know, I hear all these religious guys talking about love and compassion. You come along, you find out that, hey, wait a minute, God hates Edom. Created Edom and Jacob, created the controversy that we see in international geopolitics today. God wrote the script. God designed and made the characters and is acting out on the world scene. You know, you and I have a front row seat. Here we are in the year 2005, 2006, as this program will be played. And we are sitting right on the cusp of thermonuclear war, the collapse of the United States and the Western world, the emergence of China, Bible prophecy being fulfilled right before our very eyeballs and brought to pass by the God, the Creator, that put all of this in operation. And you and I have a ringside seat. What an opportunity. I'm about out of time. We'll have to finish up next time here on the Law Hour, an editorial review with the book on Who is Esau Edom by Charles A. Wiseman. Remember the address, 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D, Burnsville, Minnesota, 55337. Or go to your local bookstore and ask them if they've got a copy. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. I gotta leave it right there. We'll see you right here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.